This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Joy Powers. Since winning the 2016 election, President Trump has continued to hold rallies in cities throughout the country. Last night, he held one in Milwaukee to the delight and dread of people in the area. There were protests, of course, as has become the custom. And there were the familiar faces of the Front Row Joes, a group of mostly retirees who go from one Trump rally to the next, kind of like deadheads with a political bent. The scene itself has become familiar over the past few years, but journalist Sarah Kendzior says these events are anything but politics as usual. Kendzior is the co-host of the Gaslit Nation podcast, and she's an expert on authoritarianism. She joins us from Missouri, where she lives. Sarah Kendzior, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So, this is kind of a bigger question beyond Trump, but how do politicians tend to use rallies? What is their purpose, theoretically?
I mean, theoretically, rallies are used during times of campaigns when they need to get the public's attention, when they need to get the public's approval. With Trump, it's been different because the rallies from the campaign never stopped. And I think that that has to do with Trump's drive to dominate the news cycle at any cost. You know, he has these means of one-sided communication, whether it's his Twitter feed, the lack of press conferences, or these campaign rallies in which he has full control over what he says. And he knows that the media will just reprint it. You know, if he lies, the lie may end up in a headline. And so for him, that's extremely advantageous.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest questions I've had as someone who's, you know, followed along with other political campaigns. Usually when the campaign is over, the rallies stop, but his have just continued.
Oh, they need to, because Trump has based, you know, his movement, his cult, basically, around the kind of, you know, motivations that any demagogue has, where he always has to be in a battle. He always has to be in the process of vanquishing an enemy, because that's the sort of action, you know, the sort of vengefulness and spite, you know, that fills his movement. If they actually win, if he actually completes something, then he loses the momentum behind it. And I think there's also a greater sense of obligation. And so he wants people to be, you know, swept up into this continual drama. Like, I'm someone who, you know, I grew up watching professional wrestling, and, you know, a lot of it reminds me of that. He needs to come out. He needs to be this character. He needs to get the crowd engaged in the drama. He needs to proclaim his enemies. But obviously, this is incredibly dangerous when you're not in a reality TV show or a, you know, pro wrestling show, but you're acting as a head of state with autocratic ambitions, trying to, you know, at the same time get himself exonerated from all of the crimes, you know, that he's been accused of committing.
So I'd like to take a quick step back. You've actually been to a Trump rally, at least one that I know of, perhaps more. You've waited in line with people. You've gotten to know people a little bit. What is that experience like?
I mean, it was back in 2015, 2016, when I was covering the campaign, that I would go to the rallies, you know, both in Missouri and in Illinois. I think things have changed since, because at that time, a lot of people were there just out of curiosity. You know, the reason that they knew of Trump was The Apprentice. They saw him as a reality TV star. Some of them saw him as like a tycoon, as a businessman. They really bought into his promises about the economy. There were other people who were there, you know, because they were attracted to the worst things about him, his bigotry, his xenophobia, his hatefulness. But it was really kind of a mix of people. What I did notice and what alarmed me greatly at the time was that, you know, in line, people were calm, people were polite. And once they reached that arena, once they were inside of Trump, he would bring out people's worst impulses. And I went to one of the most violent Trump rallies of that year of 2016 in St. Louis. I think like 16 people were injured. And it was so easy to watch that crowd turn into a mob and to watch people who had been treating each other with consideration and kindness just begin screaming the most virulent, hateful, awful things. And that's frightening. That's the kind of thing that Trump seeks to cultivate, and his campaign team seeks to cultivate it, and the people surrounding him do. It's not something they see as negative in any way. They, in fact, see it as essential to keeping his power strong.
You've called it, in fact, a study in mob mentality. And as someone who hasn't been to one of these rallies, it sounds incredibly dangerous when you phrase it that way.
Yes, it is dangerous. It's the kind of thing you would see in any kind of demagogue turned dictatorship. It's the kind of phenomenon you see in cults. And I think it's gotten worse over the past 4 years. You know, a lot of people like to say that 40% of the country approves of Trump or voted for Trump. But I've always drawn a distinction between the voters and the base. A lot of the voters are disillusioned people who didn't like either of the candidates. There were people who weren't paying a particularly large amount of attention to the news. There were people who were duped both by the news, which really played down Trump's history of criminality, and duped by Trump himself. And then there's the base, who were conspiratorial, vicious, paranoid, and have grown even more so. They've bought into Trump's delusions. They've bought into his delusion of grandeur, and he needs that. And I think as this base has shrunk over time, it's become more fanatical. You know, there's sort of a sunk cost here where they've devoted so much of their life to supporting him and believing in him. And this kind of extends into the QAnon cult as well, that to turn away from it is a loss of identity, a loss of self. And that's a frightening phenomenon. I don't think it's a very large percentage of the country that feels this level of attachment to Trump. You know, I would think it's like probably under 5%. But we've had incidences, you know, the MAGA bomber, various people who've threatened others, particularly immigrants or non-white Americans in Trump's name. It cultivates a culture of violence. And that's what I'm worried about is, you know, less of the anger and more how does that translate into, you know, physical attacks, into assaults, into intimidation of innocent fellow Americans.
You know, these people who are very big fans of Donald Trump, they make up a fair amount, it seems, of the rally goers. They, in fact, call themselves front row Joes. Has that changed a lot since you started covering these rallies?
Well, I haven't been back to one since he won. You know, I feel like honestly, the media should be covering these rallies less. I think they give them too much attention. It's an opportunity for Trump to spread propaganda. So I can't say, you know, firsthand whether there's some sort of difference in who's showing up. But I will say that one thing I do notice in the media coverage are the same faces again and again. We've had situations, you know, where newspapers like the New York Times have accidentally interviewed the same fans over and over. And so I think, you know, what he's got going on here is not some sort of organic uprising, but, you know, it's kind of like a dictator version of a Grateful Dead show where, like, people are kind of traveling around state to state. You know, there are people hawking merchandise. There are people there for all sorts of reasons. And there are, you know, Trump fanatics. And I think that was inevitable given his, you know, demagoguery, given his style of speaking, given the fact that he was a celebrity beforehand, and one that's very good at PR, very good at propaganda, and, you know, now is in a position of political power. You know, this is not like a, you know, unprecedented phenomenon, certainly in politics.
You spoke a little bit to this about what the media sometimes gets wrong as far as these rallies go. What do people get wrong about them in general? What do people misunderstand, perhaps?
I mean, back when I was covering it 4 years ago, the main thing the media missed is how dangerous not just the rallies could be, but Trump could be. You know, he came out and launched his campaign by calling Mexicans rapists and murderers. He then proclaimed that he was going to enact an autocratic agenda. He lied incessantly, and people treated it like it was a joke. They didn't take it seriously. They didn't condemn it. They didn't look into his decades of documented criminal ties to the Kremlin, all of these things that were like blaring warning signs. And, you know, when I would bring them up, I would be called alarmist or hysterical or be told, you know, why are you taking him seriously? He has no chance to win. This is how to win. You know, Trump came out of reality TV. He came out of tabloid media. He's always been good at winning over an audience. And the audience that he's best at winning over is the coastal media, is the New York media, because he's a creature of that world. And I think that media, which often likes to see itself as sort of above these things, really fell for him and really was duped in a lot of respects. And what they're doing now, I think, with the rallies is using the Midwest in particular, you know, using the Midwest and the South as a kind of proxy for their own fanatic devotion to Trump. You know, they may not like his policies, they may not like him, but he is a moneymaker for them. They seem very intimidated by him. And I think when they go out and they find some, you know, allegedly random Trump fan, like out here in Missouri or something, they can then use that person as a proxy to kind of express what I see as their own loyalty and devotion to Trump. It's a kind of way of doing access journalism by proxy. And I think it's disrespectful to this region, you know, where they show very little interest otherwise, unless it's Trump-centered. And it's incredibly dangerous as a form of propaganda because it puts out this myth that he's this great populist figure where he really isn't. You know, he's a cult leader, and his cult, while loud, is small.
As someone who was born and raised in Wisconsin, I will say it gets frustrating when media on either coast tend to focus on just one sort of picture of the Midwest. Like, we'll have huge snowstorms, we'll have these catastrophic events that get almost no coverage, and then, you know, the moment that an election comes around, now they're at diners, now they're in our hometowns.
Yeah, it's frustrating. My in-laws live in Wisconsin, and so, you know, they've been watching this kind of onslaught of the press, you know, of the coastal press, the national press, who otherwise show very little consideration, you know, while, of course, local media is gutted. You know, that's true of the Midwest, that's true of the South, it's true of most of the country. And so there is this really dehumanizing aspect. And, you know, I think Trump knows how to capitalize on that aspect. He did that successfully in 2016. I have a lot of questions, you know, about how this election went down, about the integrity of it, the fairness of it. But one thing that's been driving me crazy in terms of your state of Wisconsin is that he won by such a narrow margin. And he won because, in part, of voter suppression, because about 200,000 people were turned away at the polls. And then his margin of victory was like 30,000 people. And yet there's this tendency in the coastal press to go to Wisconsin and see it as like Trump land, see it as Trump territory, instead of a state that is, you know, a mix of people, of ideologies, of demography, you know, the same as my state, the same as Missouri. It's so easy for them to kind of get away with it. And it's very frustrating. I think we need to push back. We need to fight back, like from here in the Midwest and the heartland, these kind of stereotypical portrayals.
Wisconsin is quintessentially a purple state. You know, I'll say, as somebody who grew up in a very red part of the state, I now live in a very blue part of the state. And even inside of those pockets, you still know a lot of people on either side of politics. Mm-hmm. Going on to kind of how Trump compares to other politicians, you know, you mentioned rallies. These kinds of things are not uncommon for politicians. How does Trump compare to other U.S. politicians?
Oh, gosh. I mean, that's a broad statement. You know, people have there's been a history of demagoguery in the United States. There's also just been a history of, you know, powerful speakers. Yeah, I would say Obama, Bill Clinton, you know, on the Democratic side fall into this category. We've seen what happens when the other side does not have, I think, like natural campaigners. Like Hillary Clinton was, you know, eminently qualified for the presidency, but she herself said, you know, she's not a great campaigner. She was not somebody who enjoyed that kind of spotlight and could command a crowd. In that regard, you know, I think our media culture has changed things. I think the digital era has changed the way a demagogue can command attention. You know, one thing I see Trump doing, both at rallies and sometimes at interviews, is putting in these kind of asides that seem random at the time. You know, I remember one of them was him proclaiming, "I am the chosen one." And he kind of did this randomly in an interview about something else. And I thought, he's doing that so that his team can create a meme out of that, so that they could create chopped up, decontextualized digital content and then, you know, share it with the world that way. They're very savvy about this. I mean, they're savvy in a very dangerous, often illegal way, you know, through their work with groups like Cambridge Analytica and other data mining firms. But I think the modern candidate, they're not just speaking to the rally in the present time. You know, they're looking at how is this going to be reallocated into the the future? How is this going to live on the internet? And of course, you know, in the past, people would think about this. They think, how will my words be used later? But usually, you know, once a rally happened, once an event happened, that would be it. You know, you wouldn't have somebody picking through it 5 years later, trying to find quotable lines, trying to find gaffes. I think nowadays, there's a different sense of temporality. There's a different sense of how words can be weaponized, both by the candidate and against the candidate. And Trump's team is unfortunately pretty good at figuring out what his base wants to hear.
Well, Sarah Kendzior, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect and sharing so much of your work.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Sarah Kendzior is a Missouri-based journalist and the author of The View from Flyover Country, a collection of her essays. Kendzior is also the co-host of the Gaslit Nation podcast. You're listening to Lake Effect on Milwaukee's NPR. You can hear more interviews like this one by visiting the Lake Effect page at wuwm.com.